Welcome to Catch the Flavor Radio on CKON 88.1 FM. This is your host, Tyrone, for today. We're going to play a piece by Deborah and Selma, two youths from Region Park Focus. They interviewed a man by the name of Adam Gimbroni, and he is the chair for TTC and as well as a city councilor. And they asked him a couple questions about the TTC in general, and I'm just going to play that piece for you guys.
So my job is as a city councilor, but also predominantly the chair of the Toronto Transit Commission, and of course with the commission runs all the buses, streetcars, and subways here in the city, and my job is to oversee the operations, but also to consider how we're going to improve the system and make it larger.
And I understand the price of TTC tickets have not been stable, actually. They keep going up, and can you talk about that and why the prices keep increasing?
So if you look at the last 30 years, to go back a little bit, and take a look at the price of everything versus the price of price of TTC has risen a lot higher than, say, the average price increases. And a lot of that has been driven by two fundamental parts. One of them is that there's been a lack of sustained provincial and federal funding for the TTC, and the TTC gets money from basically two sources, the riders, which pay about 75% of the operating costs, and the other 25% comes from one of three governments, the municipal, which provides the most, the province, and the feds. So if the government provides enough money, we don't have to ask for as much from the riders. If the government doesn't provide that money, then we're in a position where we can either cut back service, which is a problem because we have a lot of people who depend on the TTC, or we raise their fares. So over the last 30 years, the price of the TTC has gone up about 150%, whereas I think the average price has gone up a little bit. I'm sorry, the average price of TTC has gone up 350%. The average prices have gone up 150 or 160%.
Wow, that's a huge change.
And absolutely, and you saw the most recent fare increase, which was about 50 cents a ticket, and the Metro Pass went from $99.75 to $109. Next year, we have a budget deficit today, right, where it looks like we have $130 million. I have to go up $130 million. Our operating budget is $1.2 billion. And on top of that, we spend $800 million more to buy new buses, to repair the tracks. That's what they call a capital budget. And for that $1.2 billion, it's going up about 10%. Why? Fuel costs. We buy 87 million liters of fuel. So you know what the price of fuel's been doing. Our budget, just for fuel alone, will go up $55 million next year. And part of that is because of two reasons. One of them, the price, but we're also adding, October, we'll add 130 more buses. So you should have a little bit more room. Buses are being extended. Every single bus line will run from 6 a.m. to 2 a.m., whereas a lot of them shut down at, say, 9 o'clock today in the evening. So all that combines to a major cost factor, and that $130 million will have to come from somewhere, and the government will probably put in some more money, but it is likely, there's a very good chance there'll be another fare increase. To help cover the cost, just like people who drive cars are paying more, the fuel bills are huge and it's hard to cover.
Why are the adult tickets being replaced with only tokens?
So, in the long run, the TTC is working with the province to bring in a fare card. And a fare card is basically an electronic card that has a microchip in it. You can buy them today for use on the phones and whatnot, and that stores the value. So you could go on the internet in that one and put on $30 from your bank account. You could go to a machine, put on $30, however that were. Every time you rode, you just walk by and tap a system, it would automatically deduct your fare. So that's likely coming somewhere around 2012. Our problem today is that there are counterfeit tickets in circulation. And this will, if we don't act, it will cost the system somewhere $5 to $6 million a year. No one's figured out how to counterfeit these tokens. They have two metals in them. If you've seen them, they're grooved, which means every time you deposit a token, there's a scanner at the subway stations that do it. For the buses right now, there are none. You just drop something in. We will likely be outfitting the buses so that it scans the token as it goes in, so we know whether you are putting in a counterfeit token. Nobody is making counterfeit tokens because we check those right now, but someone could in the future, who knows. But you're never going to get it perfect. No one gets the tickets perfect, but it's a lot harder to check a piece of paper because the counterfeiting is so good. when we check it at our afterwards, we know which ones are counterfeit, but the operators can't see them. So that's why we're bringing in the tokens to replace the adult tokens.
It actually sounds like a good idea to try to save money. And did you guys actually arrest anybody for the counterfeit tickets?
We've made a number of arrests throughout the last couple of years. We've arrested people for counterfeit metro passes. We have special constables and undercover special constables. So, some of your listeners may have seen the constables, not just the ones in uniform, but may have seen people being arrested for fare evasion, for staking stations. We have undercover officers as well who patrol. And so they make about 3,000 arrests a year for people who are evading their fare. We're hiring more. Ultimately, we'll have somewhere around 200 special constables out there to deal with fare evasion because you have to pay your fare. So we have made arrests in the case of MetroPass. We did have counterfeit tokens, the old tokens, which is why we brought in the new one. We worked with the FBI in the United States and shut down the company in Massachusetts. And actually, they had to sell the company, and the $3 million of the sale of the company came back to the TTC to help pay for the cost of the new tokens.
A lot of youth have problems with the drivers and getting kicked out mostly because they don't have a student card. So even though they do look like students, they are students. So why is it like necessary, or why do they have to have a student card?
So there are two things. One of them is student fares are available to City of Toronto residents only. Those residents are the ones who pay the taxes that support the TTC. You ask me how is it funded? Most of it's from the City of Toronto. Why should the City of Toronto subsidize young people from Mississauga, Pickering, York region? Not that they don't deserve to have those fees, but their governments and their property taxes, because their parents pay property taxes, whether they rent or own, part of your rent goes to property taxes. That property tax funds the TTC. So we're very happy to provide student fares for young people in Toronto who are part of our city, but for people outside of whom, they also in theory deserve it, but their governments don't provide the subsidy. So it's not fair to the TTC, it's not fair to the taxpayers of Toronto. The residents. Why wouldn't we just lower the fares? If we want to lower the fares, we could lower it for students in Toronto, but not for students in other areas that don't pay for the TTC. So that's why the student card is necessary. Having said that, oftentimes the drivers won't always check for a student card each and every time. A lot of times they do. It requires a little bit of common sense and courtesy on both sides. So students should always have their student card. Especially if you're picking up from a school, a lot of times our operators should give some, 30 kids get on, two of them don't have cards. It's pretty obvious that they're coming from school, that they're 16 and not 22. But there are rules, and it's hard to ask an operator to. You don't want an operator using judgment. You want systems that are fair to everyone. And the minute you start having discretion, you start opening up the problems. Some kids, they're dressed well. Driver, they let them on. Other kids aren't dressed well, whatever that means, they don't let them on. You don't want a system like that. You want systems that treat everyone equally. And that's in the fair end of the issue about the student card. While it's annoying, because you have to remember it, forget it. A lot of adults remember their Metro Pass each and every day, right? They have to bring a card. My guess is that it's for kids who don't have MetroPass, where they have tickets, but they don't have their card. If you have a MetroPass, you're already carrying a card around, and you obviously have to have a student identification for that, but it's a lot more recommendation.
You talked a little bit more about the counterfeit adult tickets. What about the student tickets? Isn't it possible that they can counterfeit that too?
So student fares represent a much smaller part of it. You're absolutely right. Child tickets are counterfeitable, student tickets are counterfeitable, senior tickets are counterfeitable. Those all together represent only about 5% of our revenue. So we're going to keep doing that. Our special constables will keep doing checks and work with the police and the RCMP, because a lot of these counterfeit tickets have come from overseas, like in China. We've traced it back, and again, there have been arrests. So we'll continue to do that. But the revenue, because they cost less, so the total revenue, and B, students don't travel the whole year every single day. They go to work in the summer, but the same volume of students you'll notice is not as high in the summer as it is through September through April. For the universities, it's September through June for high school. So the revenue loss is less. Of course, it also allows us to zero in. Instead of having to track down adult tickets, now we can put all of our resources in to doing fare enforcement for seniors, students, and child tickets.
One of the issues that I even go through, like many drivers don't wait for you even though they see you running for the bus. Shouldn't it be a rule or that they have to wait for the rider that's coming? Or
a lot of our buses operate in rush hour on pretty frequent headways. So, I'll give you an example. Let's say a bus comes every 5 minutes, in theory. The minute that bus faces a 20-second delay, 20 seconds is nothing, right? Now, instead of 5 minutes, which is 300 seconds, right? 5 times 6. It's 280 seconds between the next bus, right? Because it's supposed to have only waited 10. You know, they factor in all these times. No problem, right? 280. Now, it happens again. Not just because someone was running for a bus, but maybe it took, there was extra too many people at a stop. Maybe it missed a light. And each of these times, 10 seconds at a time, half a minute at a time, whatever, creep that distance between the buses down and down and down. And all of a sudden, instead of having 5 minutes before, unless you have a minute between a bus. Right? Again, because if they're going over 17 kilometers, and what a minute between a bus means, basically, is that they're one right after another. And then, instead of waiting 5 minutes between a bus, because they come every 5 minutes, as an example, two of them are running together, which means you're waiting 10 minutes between, because there's two of the buses come right together, and then it's 10 minutes to the next bus in this very simple equation. So some of those ones, especially on our frequent service, you want to keep, remember, you have 30 or 40 people on that bus, maybe more, who are looking to get to the destination. That 20 seconds it takes away from you is nothing. And the next person, and the next person adds up. Now, having said that, I would hope, as the chair of the TTC, that when you're on a Sunday, for example, on the Islington bus, that comes every half an hour, I would hope, and I think you'll find this, and the drivers are much more willing to wait because 20 seconds in 30 minutes is nothing. 20 seconds on the Dufferin bus where it's only 3 minutes apart from less than 5 is a lot. So it depends. And we hope that they would use their discretion on that. Sometimes, like I ran for a bus today on Avenue Road. Like I'm the chair of the TTC, you know, and I missed it by 5 seconds. I ran, I cut across the road, and I was going to get on, and I don't think he saw me, because I'm in a suit. I mean, all these, quote, biases that one might have. I mean, the chair of the TTC, I'm 6 foot tall, so, you know, he's going to see me on the mirror, and why wouldn't he wait? Well, I don't have a car, right? So I've never owned a car. I live at Ossington, or Dufferin and Bloor. Yeah, between Ossington and Dufferin, just south of Bloor. And I've never owned a car. So I've used the TTC my whole life. I mean, I can rent a car if I want, but I don't do it that often. So when I work here at City Hall, or I work at Davisville, which is the TTC headquarters, you're on the subway. I mean, I go out all over the city. I mean, I was out, you know, on the bench yesterday for a meeting out in Scarborough, wherever it is. You'll see me on the bus. I mean, people see me all the time. Well, I mean, a part of it, people begin to realize that I do get out. So, I mean, our drivers will often, they'll recognize me getting on, and you'll normally see me up talking with the driver. But people stop and chat. I mean, people will recognize me, and they'll have a question. You know, people say, I've always wondered why they don't wait for me when I'm running for the bus. Or, you know, a good question like that. And so there'll be a lot of chances to talk. But, I mean, I use the system every day. Three or four times. I'm on a bus or a streetcar almost every day at least once. Just because I'm going somewhere and there's a bus going that way. I'm often on the subway as well, two or three times a day.
Interesting. Big money too, especially with the oil prices going up.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, the cost of TTC, if you pay for it, is $1,200 a year for an adult. Right, because they buy 12 passes, they get a month free, basically, is how it works. And you can't operate a car for that. And, you know, for me, I bring reading material. So if I'm on the subway, sometimes I'll be chatting with the guard, the guy who looks out, or the woman who looks out at both ways. Sometimes I want to just catch up on some reading. So you'll see me sitting going through newspapers. I also have a BlackBerry, right? So this also allows me to do email. So it doesn't really matter. And in most cases, in rush hour, you can't be in the subway, like going home. Well, I always have a bag, like a book bag type thing. So I've got, you know, the newspaper, whatever you want to read. Sometimes I'm reading a report on, you know, subway operation, something I have to read. I might as well read it on the way home so I don't have to read it at home, right? Or I'm sitting here on my BlackBerry responding to emails that I didn't get to in the office. And, you know, however it works, that it works for me as a lifestyle. It's also, it's a lot cheaper. I mean, I save, what, probably $6,000 or $7,000 a year. That goes a long way to, for not having a car, that goes a long way, you know, put it towards buying a place, put it towards taking a vacation, put it in the bank. I mean, whatever it is. You know, I don't do it because I'm the chair of the TTC. I've never owned a car. So I've always been on the system, and I'm going to keep doing it. I mean, there's no point for me owning a car. I even get free parking here. Right? I mean, so it's not even an issue there, but I don't use it.
You don't intend on ever getting a car?
No, I mean, I can rent a car. Like, I want it to go, if I want to go somewhere, to, you know, out in the country, I don't go that often. I mean, I often go to other cities like Montreal, so I'll take the train to Montreal. Right? And then I don't need a car in Montreal either, because they've got the metro. But I was in New York City, and who needs a car in New York City? But if I wanted to, about a month or so ago, I rented a car for a week. Cost you $100 for the weekend plus the gas. And, you know, as long as you're not doing that every weekend, even if you do it every weekend, that's only $5,200 a year, still cheaper than owning a car.
A lot of people experience rude drivers, and how can we complain about this? I mean, how do we report?
So hopefully over time, you know, our new drivers, and if you look at new drivers, a lot of them are younger, come from a lot of different backgrounds. And over time, I think the younger drivers, they're being hired with different ideas in mind. For example, in the past, we wanted to hire things like truck drivers, right? Good drivers. They drive for 10 years, then they become TTC drivers. Today, when we hire people, we don't care about your driving record, except you have to have a regular G license with relatively quickly. You can have a 1 or 2 airports, but not, you can't have a lot of problems. We'll train you in 28 days, anyone, to drive a bus. Well, what we want is we want drivers who have customer service experience. So a lot of the new drivers, the old drivers, this wasn't the requirement. So you have a very different attitude, especially after 25 years on the road. And I think what I've seen it or what I've heard is that our new drivers, and we're hiring like 800 a year because of the retirements, and also we're expanding service. Right? I told you about the 130 new buses coming. Well, we're hiring 450 new drivers. Positions, plus about 400 replacement drivers for retirees this year. And all of this comes together to have hopefully a different type of person at the wheel. People who, so a driver base that resembles the city of Toronto, but also that has a different attitude, right? And so hopefully that will change. Now, if you have a problem, because they're not there supposed to be at minimum polite, they don't always have to say good morning. I mean, it would be nice, and some do. But at the least, I mean, they have to answer simple questions. You know, there's a requirement, and that's what we expect from them. So, but if you do have a problem, you should always take a note of the bus number, right? That's all you need. If the bus number is on the inside and the outside, and note down the time, right, of the bus where you were, because that way we can trace. We know who was driving a bus, where, when. So you don't have to get a name of the driver or anything. You don't have to be confrontational if you. And so hopefully that will change. Now, if you have a problem, because they're not there supposed to be at minimum polite, they don't always have to say good morning. I mean, it would be nice, and some do. But at the least, I mean, they have to answer simple questions. You know, there's a requirement, and that's what we expect from them. So, but if you do have a problem, you should always take a note of the bus number, right? That's all you need. If the bus number is on the inside and the outside. And note down the time. Right, the bus, where you were, because that way we can trace. We know who was driving a bus, where, when. So you don't have to get a name of the driver or anything. You don't have to be confrontational. If you think you've got a problem, note the name of the route, the bus number. You'll know what route you were on, roughly where you are in the time. Pretty easy. You can email the commission. It's on the webpage. I'm chair at ttc.ca. And, you know, if you talk to the drivers, you'll know that they get cited. You know, they get upset. They say, oh, I wasn't that polite or impolite to a driver, but we'll hear it. So we do follow up. And obviously, probably one complaint won't do anything, let's be honest. But if there's a pattern, because if it's not just you writing in, if you and five or six other people, maybe we think one person, who knows. But if five or six people, chances are that we have a problem there. And so, but if you never take the opportunity to write, it'll never get to five or six. So you're right. Nothing probably will happen. You won't get he or she won't get fired, likely for one complaint. Depending on what it is, there are complaints that would justify firing right off the bat. But what happens is if over a couple months or over even a couple years, there's five or six complaints, that leads to discipline, and it could also ultimately lead to the firing of the operator.
How long is it going to take for the new buses and the new subways? Because I'm so excited, and I really think it's a good idea.
Well, so we're getting new buses. So 500 new buses are coming this year. So some of the older buses without air conditioning will begin to be taken off the road. Some of them are over 25 years old. We're adding more of the total number of buses at rush hour. Will go up by about 130 in October. The new bus routes will be extended. So there'll be more service out there. Those are new buses. We're also starting to break ground on the subway this fall. That won't open until 2015, though. It's $2.6 billion. We will break ground on the Shepherd LRT. So we're building the transit city lines, which are seven new light rail lines, 120 kilometers. They'll be on Shepherd East from Don Mill Station all the way to Meadowvale. There'll be the Finch West, going from Finch Station down to Centennial College. There'll be Jane, going from Steeles to Jane's Station. There'll be the Don Mills line, going from Steeles and Don Mills to probably Cape Station. The Eglinton line, which will go from Terminal 1 at the airport to Kennedy Station. The Scarborough-Mulvern line, which will go from Kennedy Station out Eglinton, up Kingston Road, and up Meadowvale to connect to the new Shepherd line. And then you also have the extension of the SRT in Scarborough from the current terminus all the way up to the Mulvern Town Center. The first work, so we talked about the subway, will be Finch starts next summer. So you'll see the work happening, Shepherd starts next summer, Finch next fall, Eglinton 2010, and then the Scarborough Rapid Transit line in 2010 as well. So there's a lot of projects on the go. When you look at it, it will create a web, and the principle is that no one should be disadvantaged by not owning a car. So everywhere you go in the city, you'll be able to get there on a dedicated LRT line, sort of like Spadina. So no traffic, they control the signals. So you imagine the streetcar going, before it comes to an intersection, it's sending a signal, the light goes green for the streetcar, it stops the traffic, and the streetcar goes through. And we're having the meetings. Last night I was at a meeting for Finch line. So these are going ahead quickly. Council has already approved the Shepherd line, and we will start construction next year on it. And it will open in 2012. It's 17 kilometers, right, from Don Mills over to the... It will actually likely go all the way to the zoo, because the zoo is at Meadowvale and Shepherd. So it might as well go a kilometer up and connect it up to the zoo. So there's a lot going on transit, and people will begin to see major construction. We're also renovating stations. This year, we're doing Pape and Victoria Park, being totally renovated. We're doing elevators, all that stuff, but there's a lot happening in transit. We also have some work to be done on the waterfront lines down by the lakeshore. We'll be doing new lines out to the new communities that will be built there.
Wow, I can't wait.
Okay, so you know how other countries have like really strong public transit system, like London, Spain, and New York, even though it is improving and so on, but in addition to all the improvements, and is there anything else that TTC are trying to improve to make it even stronger?
So when you look around the world, there are some major cities. You talked about London and New York, some of the largest systems in the world. Those cities are about 5 to 6 times our size. There's 25 million people in the greater New York area. In the greater Toronto area, there's 5.5. So we have to be somewhat realistic about the size of the system we need. We're building LRT, light rapid transit, and what we've just been talking about with the transit city lines. That'll be 120 kilometers, and that will put us up when that's complete, about 10 years, it will put us up in those leagues. Not in New York, because New York has 480 subway stations. We're the third largest system in North America. The first is Mexico City, has the biggest system. New York is second, Toronto is third. So, you know, we should remember we're doing okay. We're not where we want to be. And the mayor will often say, we have a great subway system for a city of 1.5 million. The problem is the actual city of Toronto, not including the suburbs, is 3 million. So it tells you we have some work to do, and that's what the transit city lines are about, is getting that work underway. We're also doing things like automating the subway. The new subway trains come next year. There'll be tube trains, so there'll be no cars. You'll be able to walk from one end all the way to the other. They'll hold more people. And starting in 2012, they'll be run by a computer, no driver. So what those will do is right now the Young Line carries 35,000 people an hour, 1 hour. It will go up to 50,000 because they'll be able to run more trains because it's computer running it, right? If you're driving, you have a manual driver, it's like on a highway. You have to be careful to be able to brake with the car in front of you. Well, a computer knows where all the cars are, and so you can add more trains. So we'll be able to carry more people on the Young University line, and when we're finished that, we'll start automating the Bloor Danforth line to be able to continue to carry more and more people on those lines. So between automation, between new vehicles, right? We're ordering new streetcars. We have the new subway cars coming next October. They were ordered 2 years ago. New buses, renovating stations. We're working on it, and there's actually that plan to move forward. So there's a lot happening in transit right now.
Okay, since the buses and so on are running, they're going to be automated and stuff, would there be a TTC worker in there? And if not, are they going to get fired? Are they going to lose their jobs?
So right now there are two staff members on every train, one of them driving, one of them guarding, and then at the end of the line they switch up. What we will do is we'll take the driver off, we'll still have a guard, because a full subway train packed at rush hour, the new ones, will carry 1,600 people each train. So if there were a problem, we want to have someone on the train. So say we had to evacuate the train in a tunnel. Doesn't happen very often. You'd want to have one TTC member who knows the system to be able to help people and tell them where to go. You know, walk up this tunnel, see where it says exit, that's the emergency exit. Go up those stairs. I mean, one person can't personally deliver 1,600, but you want somebody on the train. So because we're running more trains, 30 to 40% more trains because the computer can handle it, you're going to need 30 or 40% more guards. So you have about the same number of people, it's just that you'll be running more trains. You'll still have one person on each train.
There was some incident that occurred where people's safety was at risk. What is the TTC doing or working on for the safety of the riders?
So in terms of safety, I mean, our primary issue is dealing with security issues on the system. So there are cameras by the end of mid-2009, there'll be cameras in every subway station, on every bus, on every streetcar, and the new subway cars have cameras. So we're able to provide that level of security and looking at what's happening. Nobody watches those cameras because you can't watch 12,000 cameras, but if there's a problem, we can zero in and use those tapes, and we've already done that. There are more special constables, which are the TTC police. They have the same powers as the police. And then also, in terms of the safety of passengers, we're also, we're concerned about whether people are tripping and falling. Those sort of things continue to modify designs so that when you have new stations, they're safer. You always want to take a look at a new space to make sure there are no blind alleys, no hidden corridors. I mean, those are areas where you want to think about people's safety as paramount. The system is one of the safest. You're probably safer in the system than you are out on the streets, even though the streets are pretty safe because the system is monitored. And, there are always going to be some problems. When we carry 1.5 million people a day, there's going to be some percentage of problems, and that we have to recognize, but we also don't want to blow it out of proportion.
I remember when the strike happened, a lot of people were so upset. There was graffiti in Banana Station and so on. There were rumors that there might be another strike. Is that actually possible?
It's hard to say never, but right now the provincial government, if you'll recall during the strike, convened a very rare Sunday session. They debated for only half an hour and they passed a law. So what would happen if there was another strike tomorrow is they would be in violation. Each day comes with a $2,000 to $3,000 fine, time in jail. For the people, I mean, it's a provincial law that orders them back to work. So they are prohibited from going, effectively, from going on strike, and afterwards they have a contract. So, who knows, but the consequences are pretty severe at this point.
And this concludes our interview. I don't know if Deborah, you have anything else to say?
Thank you for giving me this opportunity to talk to you about this. One of the exciting things talking to you is that you guys talk to a different group that may not be watching the 6 o'clock news. I mean, younger people from all different backgrounds don't always watch the news. They get their news from different sources, blogs. They get them on specific big radio program, so to have a chance to tell you what's coming, right, is exciting because we want more people to know. And, of course, there's TTC.ca with the new webpage that launched. And so that's an opportunity for people, if they're obviously interested in more information, to get it.
Yeah, and this is a youth radio show, so I hope a lot of youth will be listening to it. And, again, this is Salma and
Debbie.
And we're here with Adam Giambroni. You're listening to Catch the Flavor, CKLN. Thank you.